Everybody, it's a plain and simple fact that we all have problems setting, sticking with, and achieving our goals. If you're like me, you've looked at other people's accomplishments and said, I wish I could have done that, or I wish I could do that, or I wish I could be like that. So why do some people seem to get so much done, accomplish their goals, and achieve their dreams, while some of us just get stuck? And how have some people become so prepared when the whole idea of survival training and to breathe? And how have some people become so prepared when the whole idea of survival training and emergency preparedness can feel so overwhelming, especially if you're just getting started? Well, in today's podcast, Craig, Ben, and I are going to help you tear down the barriers to success in achieving your goals and help you get on the fast track to preparedness by taking you step by step through a simple yet transformational system called SMART Goals. Welcome to the Survival Show podcast, where it's our job to take you step by step through the mindset, skills, tactics, and gear you need to survive almost any crisis, emergency, or disaster, and show you how to use the lessons you learn today to thrive in your life tomorrow. I'm David, with my right-hand man, producer Ben, and Mr. Craig Cottle, the director of Nature Reliance School. What's up, boys?
Busy, busy. I'm sure that's what's going on with Ben, too.
Always busy.
It's at that time of year.
Busy. Busy, busy like a bee. Craig, all my bees died over the winter.
Oh, did they really?
Yeah, no joke, man. I mean, we had
so much. What caused that?
I'm not sure, because I tested a new way of keeping the moisture out of the hives and increasing the circulation, because the bottom line is bees can suffer the cold, but they can't suffer the moisture. Mm. And I'm not sure, man. I mean, we had so much snow. There were probably a couple weeks where the entrances to the hives could have been plugged up. So I'm wondering if they suffocated. That's what I'm wondering.
Oh, wow.
But anyway, I lost all my bees. We'll get that fixed. I got three new packages ordered for sometime in May, and we'll get that moving forward. But hey, on a positive note, why don't each one of you guys tell me something that you're excited about this week, or you have been through already this week that you're excited about to get us started here?
Go for it, man. You can go first.
Oh, where do I start?
Mud water.
That can be yours. Well, just completed our climbing training for this year.
Yeah, I did that. At EKU, East Kentucky University, I was high ropes and low ropes certified. That's good training. It's always good training.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good for, just getting your mind thinking about how to
be safe. Did you have to do the rescue and everything? Somebody stuck on rope and you had to get down and rescue them?
We didn't this time because we ran out of time, but we did last time.
Mm. Gotcha.
I wouldn't say I'm particularly excited about that, but it's cool that that's done. And yeah, I got so much going on, a house being built and working on that. That's exciting. And actually, it's more exciting that it's almost done. So, and I won't have to do that anymore.
Yeah.
Craig, you'll like this. So as soon as we're done with this podcast, I'm out of here. You know, Joe's been on the podcast before, and he's also been in several Ultimate Survival Tips videos. He is a full-time pastor and a good friend. He actually does our email marketing now, and he put together this, I'm calling it man camp, but basically it's a Christian man camp, and it's out at his Thousand Hills, and I'm doing five of the activities out there this weekend. And we've got some great speakers that are taking guys through how to be a joy-filled dude. So I'm super stoked about that. It's been a couple of years since I've been out there doing training. So that's pretty cool. How about you, Craig?
We just came off a big land nav class. Land nav's always exciting. It's a full weekend of navigating with map and compass in the dark. And the last two classes have always rained heavily, so it's a good challenge for everybody. And then I've got survival class this weekend. Both classes packed. I think I've got 25 coming this weekend for survival level one. So the beginner classes have all been taking place this spring, and then we're going to have level twos in the summer and in the fall, plus some more level ones. So yeah, it's been incredibly busy time.
Oh, that's a great way to do it, so people can kind of follow the sequence through the year if they want
to. If they want to, yeah.
Nice. You're building a survival army out there in Kentucky, aren't you?
Pretty much. That's been the goal. But it seems like even LANAV this past time, half to two-thirds of the people were from out of state. So we're changing the world, not just Kentucky now.
Nice.
So that's a good thing.
All right, everybody. You guys ready to get into today's topic?
Yeah, man. I'm ready. Let's do this.
All right, everybody. So last time we covered 10 common roadblocks to achieving your life and preparedness goals. So today we're going to review those and set the stage. But before we go through that, I want to make sure that we're looking through this whole goal setting thing through the lens of how we can get better prepared, starting from where we are at today. Because especially, Craig, I don't know if you've noticed this, but especially in times like this, we really all want to forget about how crazy the things are in the world, in the U.S., and we just want to get back to normal. And so we can start to normalize what's not normal and start ignoring things that we shouldn't be ignoring. So our primary goal, I just want to be totally clear with this. Our primary goal today is to encourage you to get a plan together today or increase or accelerate your preparedness plans so you can get better prepared for what very well may be ahead. Wow. You can also use today's podcast to kind of forge ahead and set some goals to achieve your dreams, maybe even start a new business or live a more fulfilling life. But I just want to make sure that we're just all kind of like focused on the primary goal of moving forward and getting better prepared today. Does that make sense, Craig?
It does make sense.
Okay, so as far as like what's ahead, Craig, I'm going to throw you on the spot right now. Do you see this kind of like how we want to make things normal? I mean, I'm feeling it myself. I just don't even want to watch the news.
Yeah, David, I think you're dead on. I think as humans, we tend to have a very natural normalcy bias, meaning we want everything to be normal. We don't like things when there's a lot of change. And so there's been so much change that we have been in basically a constant state of disruption. And it seems like the government, from my perspective, continues to want to continue to disrupt what it is that's going on. And because of that, it can be difficult for people to just find their way doing much of anything. Mm-hmm. And so we've got to find a way. And I'm not saying that we should find a new normal. I'm not saying that. What I am saying is that we should, even in the midst of stressful situations or situations where things are way outside the norm, we've got to find a way to smooth out what it is that's going on rather than consider it's a bad thing. And I really don't like saying the new normal because I want things to go back the way they were. Mm-hmm. And it's not just a one. I think they should be. But at the same time, you know, we say it a lot of times, embrace the suck. We just got to be in the middle of these things that are awkward and just be okay with them, that we just move with them as best we can and then affect change within that. Because when we're not embracing the suck, if we're all just off kilter because of normalcy bias, then we can't think clearly. And we got to be in a position where we can think clearly. I hope that makes sense.
That does make sense. So let me ask you this, Craig, and Ben, you can throw in here also. What do you feel is like the biggest threat? Now, we don't have to get political or anything, but there's a lot going on right now. What do you think we need to just be, as a whole, mostly aware of as far as what could be ahead?
We don't have to get political, or you don't want me to get political?
You can do whatever you want, Craig.
Okay.
That's good then, for ratings. So.
Well, I'll put it this way, and I'll do my best to be unbiased because I know we have listeners on both sides of the political spectrum. And that's one of the things I do like about our country is that we have different political entities and we can debate and look at things. That's where things have devolved. At this point, we don't do that anymore. Mm-hmm. It's almost like both sides tend to shove things down one another's throat and there's a lack of debate and discussion and, and not, critically
that's not conversation.
Say again.
That is not conversation.
No. But I think our biggest threat right now is literally our political office holders. They don't work for us anymore. They seem to think that we work for them for some reason, and that's idiotic. And I'm sick of it. And I know a lot of people have been sick of it for a long time. And people like me that have kind of been lazy about it and are on the outskirts of not doing much, or I'm tired of it. I'm doing stuff now. I'm going to be vocal. I'm going to literally campaign for people that I think should win office. I'm going to be vocal about people that I think are idiots, and I'm going to back it up with facts and be happy to discuss it with people. I think because we're getting destroyed from within right now. So no matter who's in party, we're just fighting. We can't do that. We've got to discuss things and move forward instead of arguing and fighting all the time.
How about you, Ben?
What was the question again? I was listening to Craig and I was like, wait, I forget what the question was.
So what do you think is ahead, and what do you feel are the biggest threat is that we need to be aware of as we move forward into this whole goal setting thing? Because I think it's a good motivation. We're going to actually talk about motivations here in a little bit. It's a good motivation to kind of know why you're doing your preps, I suppose.
Is this in regards to just survival, or is this in regards to life?
It can be in regards to whatever geopolitical, personal, financial, social thing that you're concerned about.
I think, honestly, it's the thing I'm the most concerned about is the way that everybody can't have a face-to-face conversation anymore. And it's gone so far in the social media, and everything's just gone online, and nobody can have an honest conversation. And it's tearing the country apart. And I wouldn't even consider myself Republican anymore, because I don't think that most of the Republicans are even good people. So as far as like political goes, I'm all for like the country as a whole, you know, working together for the good of the people. And getting rid of all these elite corporations that seem to have a stranglehold on everything. So I think that's the thing I'm most concerned about. And this, you know, like Craig was saying, I'm trying to be more vocal about that, I guess, and supportive of not just across the, you know, political lines, but anybody who's doing the job of what they were voted in for, is, you know, somebody that I will stand up for, whether they're whatever side they form on. So yeah, I'm all for, bringing the country back together and stopping this, you know, there's no conversation with, you know, it's like, it's gotten to the point where it's like, oh, you're a Democrat? Oh, wow, I can't talk to you about this. Oh, you're a Republican? Oh, wow, you must believe that this and this. So anyways, all the assuming is not good for the country.
So a good thing to do is ask open-ended questions. What do you think about this? What do you think about that? And possibly maybe an action step from right here is just have an open conversation with somebody who maybe you may not agree with on all things. Maybe start with somebody we're so divided. Maybe start with somebody where you have a lot in common, maybe a couple of things that you do not, and have an open, honest conversation and listen to each other.
Well, here's the thing with the world we live in, with social media, with...
Turn it off.
It's all curated to what you're interested in. So if you never have a conversation with somebody, they may never even know what the other side believes. They just know that their social media feed and news that they listen to, because obviously if they believe one thing, they're going to listen to one news. And if they believe another thing, they're going to listen to the other side. They have no idea. All they know is like, they're supposed to be mad at you for this. So if you're able to have a conversation with somebody and open their eyes on, or, you know, your eyes get opened on something, you know, I think that's healthy. And I think we've lost the art of conversation.
Good. Anything else on that, Craig?
No, I'm with you. I mean, it's what I was saying earlier, is we got to get to the point where we can converse, and I don't know if debate or just have logical discussions at the very least with other people, particularly those that are different from us.
Yep.
All right. So why don't we just get in and do a little review of last time? We did kind of blitz through these obstacles to accomplishing your goals, but why don't we key in on a couple of these that particularly stick out to us? And one thing that I'll start out with is unrealistic expectations. I do this all the time because my wife says I'm a happy baby, and my glasses mostly all the time half full. And so I tend to overcommit to things and have unrealistic expectations by about double. And Craig, you and Ben have maybe triple or quadruple. I'll set a goal, or I'll think that I'm going to get something done in a week, but it'll take me a month, or I'll say it's going to take me a year and it'll take me two. So unrealistic expectations, just being self-aware that you tend to be overly optimistic or overly pessimistic about how you perceive what you can do.
I think that's especially true for those that are prepping, because especially those that are trying to get into it for the first time, or maybe just see the need. And so they're trying to develop their own base of, you know, what I call mindset, skills, tactics, and gear. Goal setting is critical to being able to do that. And I think I said it last podcast, but it's like eating a sandwich. You do it one bite at a time. You don't eat the whole sandwich at once. And so it's better to get started and doing something rather than not doing anything at all. But as far as goals are concerned, if you set those goals that are unachievable, then you're constantly beating yourself down. Mm-hmm. If you're working with others, you know, for example, you're working with family or friends or what have you, and you constantly set these goals and they're three times the amount what they should be and you don't achieve them, then it's hard to bring people into what it is that you're doing, in my opinion. And because somebody always usually takes the lead in a family on preparedness, if that person's the one that's doing the goal setting and the other people are constantly saying, well, we're not meeting our goals, then it's demoralizing. So you've got to set, as you said, realistic expectations and goals rather than just shoot for the moon. You got to set stuff that's, you know, pushes you, but that you can achieve. And so you get those, what we call little victories. Mm-hmm. In survival class, Rodney Van Zandt, one of my teachers, always talked about little victories. You got to have little victories, and those little victories add up, and it keeps you motivated and keeps you moving forward.
I think you brought up a good point there, Craig, too, and just fighting the negative and doing that by setting yourself up with smaller wins. I remember when I started getting into this around the early 2000s, it seemed so overwhelming. And the more that I read, the more videos I saw, the more people I talked to, the more complicated it seemed. I needed a bug out bag, and I needed a never coming home bag, and I needed a go bag, and I needed everyday carry, and I needed, you know, to know how to make a bow drill and how to, you know, do all these various different skills. And it quickly became very, very overwhelming seeming. So when I started Ultimate Survival Tips, part of my goal was to take people on my journey through discovery. So I would learn skills and I would go to trainings, and then I would try to simplify them for folks to put them into bite-sized chunks. So I just want to encourage anybody who's just starting out, or you feel overwhelmed at this particular point, you're like, gosh, it's going to cost me thousands of dollars to have the food that I need in case something goes really bad, or get a generator, or all this stuff. So just like we always say, just look at where you're at. And just by listening to this podcast and doing one thing out of what you hear today is going to make you more prepared tomorrow than you are today.
Yeah, and I think we can also, in that situation, because it is difficult to get preparedness supplies together, preparedness skills together, and all that kind of good stuff, we can, yeah, I don't know how to say it other than we have a tendency to think, well, we're not going to get hit by tornadoes here. That's going to happen in Kansas, or we're not going to have an earthquake here. Those things have rarely happened in this part of the world. And we just, it's almost like a I wish syndrome where, you know, I just wish we didn't have to deal with this at all. And you keep convincing yourself of that so that you tell yourself it doesn't happen. And when it doesn't happen a couple of times, then you convince yourself you don't need to prepare. And prepare is definitely something, one of those things that we hope people don't use them, but it's an insurance policy. You got to have it in case something happens. And the people in Texas this past year are perfect examples of people that were completely and totally unprepared and just didn't have the ability to even turn the water off to their own home. I mean, something as simple as that is crazy to me. So, you know, it's just, there's a lot of simple things that can add up to being really prepared and getting started on those simple things and not putting them off like, ah, that's not going to happen to me over here. That's, you can't do that. You can't do that at all.
Craig, I like that I wish syndrome. And another angle of that may be that we often say things like, oh, I wish I could fly a plane, or I wish I could look like him, or I wish... my son-in-law, Gabe, showed me this bass. I play bass guitar, and this bass, young bassist who was just ripping it. And I actually said to him, I said, man, I wish I could play like that. But here's the thing. If I really wanted to play like that, now it takes some natural skill for things. We're beautifully and wonderfully made. And we all have special skills and emphasis, things that we're better at and things that we're not so good at. I'm not saying that we should just push forward with, you know, something that maybe we're not inclined to or gifted at. But if I really wanted to play bass guitar better, or I really wanted to fly a plane, I would prioritize myself and set goals to accomplish that. So I think the whole I wish syndrome can also be, it's kind of like a passive excuse that we can have in our lives that can cause us to end up not doing anything. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I was saying. I mean, you just get hooked on not doing anything at all, because you either let it bypass you, considering that, you know, the tornadoes aren't going to hit here, or you look at it and just realize that, hey, I can't do that. And so you don't even try to overcome it. You look at it as nothing more than a wall that you can't overcome. You can overcome the wall. Just, you might not be able to go over it, but go around a daggone thing, or go under it if you have to, but figure out a way to get on the other side. So, yeah, I hope that metaphor offers something to somebody, but at the very least, we got to figure out a way to get on the other side of being better prepared. That's for certain.
Yep. Another thing is wasting time. I've been noticing this in my own life. I've gotten into some bad habits with the whole COVID thing happening and spending a lot more time watching things online. There's just bad habits that would play into bad habits. Now, how about core values? Do you know why you believe what you believe? And do you know what you believe? Do you have some life priorities and core values? And I'm just kind of like leaving a little pause here in case you guys want to step in on any of these.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, two things as far as the wasting time. I've noticed that there's been almost like a positive response to people talking about binging on shows on like Netflix or whatever. Mm-hmm. I binge watched a show. I spent all weekend watching that show, and everybody laughs and cuts up, and that's funny and that's cool. That's such the biggest waste of time I could ever imagine in my life. And for some reason, we have embraced that as a positive thing. And I don't think it's a positive thing. I'm not saying that everybody shouldn't relax and take a break every now and then, do something that maybe has nothing to do with preparing. I like entertainment for entertainment value. Some people like watching sports for entertainment value. Just do something to get away for the entertainment value of it. But when that becomes the only thing that you're doing, then we got productivity problems. I mean, that might be the very reason that people say they wish they could do this or they wish they could do that. A friend of mine put up on social media the other day, one of the things that aggravates him and just gets his goat is when people say, that must be nice. Yeah, it must be nice. It must be nice that you got 70,000. This is me, not you, David. It must be nice, Craig. You got 70,000 people on YouTube following you now or subscribing now. And I'm like, must be nice. That was a lot of work.
That was a lot of work, man. Yeah.
It must be nice that you get to go out and play in the woods every weekend. No, that's work. I mean, it's work that I enjoy, but I've worked to get to that point. So kiss my grits, you know? I mean, come on. Must be nice. It's one of them things where I'm getting to the point where I just want to slap people when they say stuff like that. It's like, wake up. I'm not a violent person, though, so I won't.
I'm not sure if Benny, producer Ben. Sorry, Ben's my son, so you know, he's got all kinds of nicknames here. Benny, you got anything to say?
Nope.
You don't have any time to yourself. I mean, Ben's restoring a house. He's got three kids. He's
read a book. That's what I say.
Read a book, right? Yeah. Let's see. Run down through this list, Craig. Anything else jumping out at you?
Just I noticed the list that you put together, Gearhead Syndrome, and I get that a lot too. And I'll be getting that this weekend. I think Tracy Trimble's another instructor at Nature Alliance School. We were talking about making a video on the top 10 people you see at a survival class. And one of them's going to be the gearhead, you know, the guy that's got, you know, three or four knives. He uses a knife every different scenario you get into, and he's got everything. It's shiny and it's pretty and it's whatever, and it just drives me crazy. Oh man, they can't accomplish anything. I remember going to a gunfighting class years ago, and the instructor at one point in time, we drew our weapons, put them on target, and he said, now drop your weapon. And we're on a gravel shooting range, and I did what the instructor told me to do. I dropped my weapon. I carry a weapon that I know is not an issue for me to drop, right? And there were people that hesitated, either one, because they weren't sure they had a weapon they could drop, and if that's what you have, you need to get another one. And number two, they had spent so much money on the prettiness of their firearm that they were scared to drop it. And both of those are major problems. You know, if you're so keyed into how pretty your firearm is or your blade or your pack or whatever, then you're not prepared.
Yeah, then don't go to Craig's tactical survival training.
and don't comment on my crap on Instagram either. I get so aggravated with people. Man, that knife, what have you done with that knife? It looks like it's been used a lot. And people say that as if it's if they're knocking me down. And I'm like, I mean, how can I speak intelligently about something if I'm not using it? I can't. I've got a whole toolbox full of knives that get used a lot. So people putting up pictures, and I know from a marketing perspective, you got to put pictures of a knife up that's pretty. I get it. You know, we put some really pretty pictures of your knife on our Instagram the other day. I don't know if y'all saw them, but and they're pretty and they look good, but they don't look pretty anymore because I've been using them. So the pretty pictures are over. So I don't know. I don't get it. I'm different than most people, though.
Craig, I want to cover one more. That's really good. I want to cover one more here. And I think it's actually two things on this outline I put together. It's work ethic issues and entitlement or poverty mentality culture, where we get something for nothing. I think not only do I think this, I see this. I mean, the government's giving money out like crazy. We're printing money, I hear. And there are certain areas, I don't know if you have this in your area, but there's a certain even part of our county where there's kind of a poverty mentality. Like there's an entitlement mentality. There's a lot of social issues in that part of our county, an inordinate amount of people from those particular two or three towns populate the local county jail. And so I think if that's you, just receive that and do something about it. What do you have to say about that one?
No, I think you're dead on, man. I have nothing to add to that. I think you
do. Wow, okay. And I think last but not least, and then we'll get into some motivations, things that motivate us to accomplishing our goals, is I think many people simply don't know how to set, because we've had a real lack of mentoring. Mentoring used to be just something that you started to be mentored by your father or some respectable other adults. And we're just losing that whole family context of mentoring. So some people simply don't know how to set goals, and sometimes they just give up. And if that's you, or you have a genuine lack of confidence, you are here today for a reason, because we're going to take you through a really, really simple way on how to set some goals and how to just strike a spark within yourself. All right, Craig. So up next, what sorts of things do you think that we need? And I'm just thinking like inspiration, motivation, those sorts of things. What do you think spurs us on to want to change or be better? I don't know a better way to say that. Maybe you can.
There's several different things I think we could go into. Some of them are kind of subjective. Some of them are very objective. But one objective thing that's, you know, you can almost measure as you look at your neighbor, and I'm not saying from a covetousness perspective, but you look at your neighbor and go, man, I wish I had a vehicle that would do that. I wish I had a lawnmower that I didn't have to spend five times as amount of time mowing a yard, kind of thing. And so you see other people with other stuff, and I'm not saying you're wanting their stuff, but you get almost like inspiration. You can say, hey, they've got this and that works well. I wouldn't mind getting that too, but I can't get that down at the local pick it up for free market. I've got to work for it. And so you start putting feet to pavement to get things done so you can afford to purchase or work towards getting something like that. I think more subjective though is things like our emotional attachment to different people, different things, different situations. I think that's important. And I think from a real direct survival, like literally like a disaster situation or survival perspective, we can get into, we can get into how our will works, how our bulletproofing our mind works, and how those things coming together will give us, you know, a mindset again to put feet behind the legs of skill development, working with others and getting the gear that you need.
I'd like to go down through, I've studied a lot of marketing. I used to be an advertising director, business developer and stuff like that. And through the years, it's just part of the course. You study the positive and negative things that motivate people. So marketers and the media and even politicians use these things every day to get you to buy stuff and do what they want you to do. And I'm just going to run down through this list. Ben and Craig, feel free to pick from this list. But these are written in textbooks for marketing and PR. So first we've got, these can be positive and negative motivators, depending on how you look at them. First we have fear. We're seeing a lot of that. Fear of missing out, fear of harm, fear of becoming old, fear of not having everything you think you deserve to have, fear of loss of something. Anything to add to that one, Craig?
No, I would agree that fear is a big thing as of right now. And people have a different viewpoint. Some people think from a scriptural perspective that fear is not a thing that we should give too much credence to. I think there's some valid arguments there, really. But I also think that fear is something that happens to us. And if we look at it simply from a physiological standpoint, like certain things cause us to react. For example, we hear it aloud, you know, a perfect example of something that happens that we really have no control over is if we hear a real loud noise close to us, we'll almost immediately pull our shoulders up. And what we're doing is protecting our head. And there's no amount of stopping that can make that happen. Not a lot of training. I mean, unless you're training for warfare to how to fight in the middle of loud noises, that's a physiological response and that we don't have much control over. So, you know, adapting to that for the sake of understanding that we have it and knowing that we're going to overcome it is an absolute critical aspect of survival training.
Mm-hmm. And even from a Christian perspective, we've often said, and I've often heard this, and I've often said it too, is that the opposite of fear is faith.
Yeah, I can dig that. Yeah, I can dig that.
Okay, guilt, that most of the time when we think of guilt, we think of that as a negative thing.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of guilt. Mm-hmm. I see that people have it. I mean, as far as a motivator for survival and disaster readiness, then, you know, if you feel guilty about the fact that, you know, your family doesn't have any electricity in Texas, then you should feel guilty for that because you mm-hmm. should have done something about it.
Good point.
And flooding, you know, flooding, that's a different animal. I mean, who expects the 200-year flood to come 2 or 3 years in a row like it has in some locations of the country? So, not being, I keep going back to this because I read of this so many times, but not being able to turn the water off to your own house, that's a problem. That's a real problem. Not being able to turn electricity off to your own house, that's a problem. Simple things that we should all have under our own control and not have guilt afterwards about them, that's for sure.
So we've got fear, guilt. Next one is greed, which you can also look at that as want or need or even a desire for better things, depending on the context.
I've always got to bring this up when we talk about this subject, okay, because I think it's worthy of discussion. We have a tendency, and I've said this so many times to this audience and to our students at Nature Reliant School, we have a tendency to see zombies as the people that are going to be attacking us in disaster readiness, the zombie hordes, you know, these inanimate people, unhuman people that attack us. And so we have no issues doing whatever it is that we need to do to them. And I think we see bad actors, bad aggressors would maybe be a better description of people that would come after our stuff. And I think we've got to get our own stuff. I think we got to take care of our own families. But we also have to realize that a lot of times that the person that's going to be coming and looking for assistance from us is a kid who has lost their parents in the disaster, or the old lady that lives across the street that just lost her husband and doesn't know what to do. And, I mean, is that the person that we do, you know, shoot in the face like we do zombies? No, that's not what we're going to do. We got to gather some stuff. That's for sure. And I'm not saying be greedy about it, but we need to get some stuff and then consider having some stuff available to others. I'm not saying that you should give everything away. That's totally your personal choice, but I think it would be worthwhile to at least have some supplies that, you know, yep, I'm going to give this up.
And Craig, what I'm hearing you say is instead of greed, we can look at that as provision gathering. I mean, it's like, hey, I don't have the stuff I need to be able to provide for myself, my family, and potentially others. Maybe I need to do something about that.
Well, here's a realistic thing that's happening right now that is greed-based. I taught a course 2 weeks ago, and in that course, there was somebody that worked at ammunition manufacturer. Mm-hmm. So you can imagine the discussion around the campfire is, where in the heck is all the ammo at? And this person's response was, listen, we have been making ammunition 24 hours a day for long before Trump was even president. Okay. where is it going? Well, it's going somewhere. It's going to a middleman. I think a lot of it's going there. I think government entities are gobbling a lot of it up. But I also think that there is a greed perspective on some people that they're going to the stores and paying top dollar just to get more and more ammo that they are not going to be able to utilize. And so if you got two or three guys down the street that are picking up all the ammo and it's not spread out, then all you got to do from a war perspective is hit the couple of dudes on the street, take all their ammo, and then, you know, everybody's screwed. So if you could spread out the love and not be so greedy so that everybody can get a little bit of ammunition, then, you know, we're better off. And I'm not saying you shouldn't get ammunition. I'm just saying people that buy pallets and pallets of ammunition and don't allow anybody else to get ammunition, that's not a good war tactic. Mm-hmm. If that's what's going to happen here, it's not a good war tactic.
So we've got fear, guilt, greed. Next one is love. I've heard this, depending on the book, they'll say sex, you know, sex sells. They always say love, hate, and sex. I kind of group those all together. And I think the obvious draw of sex is just something that personally we all need to be aware of and stand by our core with regards to that. Love, I think a lot of us, if not all of us, I hope, have experienced that. Hate seems to be the driving this. There just seems to be a lot of hate, and that gets back to what you and Ben were saying earlier.
Yeah, that's happening a lot right now. And people don't really hate other people. They really just don't have any connection to them.
Right.
The social media does anything but makes us social. It makes us antisocial. Mm-hmm. It's not making us more social. And most people, maybe similar to the way I got on, hey, I would like to see some of my old friends that maybe I haven't seen for a while. And that's what got us on social media. And now I use it as a business tool. And that's about it. And so we've got to figure out a way to get more social. And we've been trying to do that with Zoom classes. We've been trying to do that with, you know, in-person classes and getting together with people. Depending upon where you are, you know, we've had a lot of people come to our Zoom classes that are on that other end of the spectrum from where most of our people are, meaning politically is what I mean, is that they feel comfortable coming on Zoom class because we're not in one another's face. Okay, then let's have some time before class and after class where we just hang out on Zoom. We talk for a while. And that way we can get some of this, as much as we can, social interaction in through something like Zoom, rather than just all sitting in our own little vacuums at home and never hearing anybody else's opinion. I hope that makes sense.
It does. Okay, fear, guilt, greed, love, exclusivity. That's an interesting one. Before I started studying marketing and PR, I had never thought of exclusivity, but you see it all the time. You see the fancy car commercial where there's hardly any words, and you know that that's a pretty expensive car and you want it because it's, you know, it's going to make you special. I suppose we could lump in with that, Craig, ego or pride also, right?
Yeah, I have an interesting relationship with pride. Most of the foundation of what is me is built on faith-based decision-making. And I personally can't find anything in scripture that talks about pride being a good thing. Matter of fact, it's talked about often about being a very, very negative thing. Mm-hmm. And so I struggle, quite frankly, and my family will probably tell you this more so than even me, but I struggle with, hey, I'm proud of you, or hey, I have pride in my country or my flag or stuff of that nature. Because from my perspective, everything that's good comes from God. It's just all there is to it. And we just happen to be on the ride with God on such things. And so if there's something that my children have done that's really good, and instead of me saying I'm proud of them, which I never do, and you can ask them and they'll tell you, I'm very happy for them that they've worked hard for what it is that they've done, and they're in a position where they are. I think the same thing comes through on disaster and preparedness, supplies, skills, everything. If you're real prideful about what you have, then anything that disrupts that is problematic. Same, it goes back to the same discussion with the gun. If you're really proud of all the money and all the effort and all the tooling that you put into that really pretty Kimber that costs $6,000 that you're on the line with, and then your instructor tells you to drop it, then you can't drop it. And what that instructor was trying to build into us is if you drop your weapon, you don't freak out. Because if you freak out, then you start looking at your weapon. And if you start looking at your weapon to see if he's got any scratches or dings in it, then that's when you get shot in the face. So if you drop your weapon, well, you pick it back up and you get back in a fight. You don't have to concern yourself with that side of it. And that's having pride in a tool. And similar to what we're talking about with knives, you know, I get people, I'll have people in class this weekend that come in with the prettiest knife you've ever seen. And I will do everything I can to get rust on that thing before it goes home. I will make them work with it to make it dirty.
I'm laughing only because I've seen it happen.
I want people to have, you know, we were talking about it at home. Recently, my wife was gifted some quilts that her great grandmother made from the mountains of Eastern Kentucky, you know, and I've got two that my grandmother made me, and we are not the type of people to take those and put them in a cedar chest and never pull them out. That's what I sleep under every night at the house, every single night. I know for a fact that my grandmother would want me sleeping with the quilt that she made. She would like that. Mm-hmm. And if we take too much pride in those things, then it's just stuff.
And it's just wall hanging.
It's an idol, and it's just stuff.
Yep.
And Jennifer's great grandmother and my grandmother would have wanted us wearing those things out, getting them dirty. There's one quilt that I take with me on a lot of trips when I know I'm going to sleep in the truck because it reminds me of home. I mean, it is what it is, but it's getting ragged, and my grandmother would be tickled to death to know that.
It's good. We just have a couple of more here. I'm just going to mention this next one, desperation. When things are desperate, I think that can be a really dangerous situation. I wasn't going to talk about this one much, but I think we have to just be aware of desperation and panic. Causing us to move outside of our core values and do things that we might otherwise regret.
I can speak from experience on that. I was thrust in a situation where pretty much every financial resource that I had was taken from me. Mm. And I considered a lot of very different things outside the scope of what I would consider standing on my foundation. I mean, just to make money, just to pay the bills and feed my family for a couple of years there. I mean, I didn't, but I got close because I was desperate. I just didn't have the money to do anything. Put gas in the vehicle, buy groceries. You know, me and Jennifer were talking about last night, there was a period of time where for 6 months, all we ate was deer meat, and that was it. That's all we had. So, you know, at that time in my life, I was desperate to get some money just to do stuff. I can tell you, you don't want to go there. So you want to, this is one of the things I think comes from pre-planning and planning, is start eating at these goals now while you can. And when things get bad, you don't put yourself in a desperate situation so that you make inappropriate critical decisions. I've been there, and it's easy to do. And I don't want to go there anymore. And I don't want people that, you know, listen to me or anything I have to say, I don't want you to go there either.
So Craig, I'm curious now, because I've been in a maybe not as desperate a situation as that, but let's just say we have a listener, Joe Zlobodnik, and he's desperate, like very desperate right now. And he just decided, hey, you saw the title of this podcast, you decided to listen. What can somebody do? They're already in that situation. They don't have an option right now to pre-prepare because they're just there. That's where they're at.
Well, first off, I think you need to listen to this. I'm on the other side of it, and I've had the most successful 12 months that I've ever had in the existence of my business. And I stuck to my principles I stuck to my foundation to get here. And back then, when I was desperate, there's no way in the world I would have believed for a second that I could get to where I am now. And I've got to where I am now because of hard work and being surrounded by some of the most high quality people in the world, particularly my wife, but particularly the student base of Nature Reliance School have brought me to where I am. I mean, and those that have, you know, Tracy Tramble and the guys that have surrounded me, you, the guys that Tracy in particular has been around me a lot, a whole lot.
He's a good dude.
And you've got to look for those people.
Yes, you do.
You've got to look for those people that are around you. I looked, I don't want to get into too much detail. It's personal really, but there was something very, very personal to me at that time. And I looked to Tracy to help me and he did. And I'll never forget it ever. And, you've got to look for those kind of people. You've got to have those people that have your back when you need it, not just when you want it, but when you need it, you got to have it and who's there. And I think you should also look to be that type of person. It's been my experience that the more you try to help people, the more people will try to help you. I've talked about this a little bit with YouTube. I quit getting in arguments with people on YouTube, on my YouTube channel anymore. And instead, everybody that says something nice, I thank them for it. And I try to say something nice back to them. And since I started doing that, people quit trolling me. It's really interesting.
It is interesting, isn't it?
So it's, you know, I don't get the trolls like I used to because I just delete them. At this point, and I don't care if anybody knows, and I just don't care if you're going to talk about something stupid, then I just don't have time. Delete. If you're saying something nice, that was really insightful. Thank you for sharing that. Well, I'll tell you that right back to you. Thank you for taking the time to watch the video. Appreciate you being here. Thanks for being part of Nature Reliance School or some variation of it.
Yep.
And that has helped. So to that person out there that might be listening, then do that. Look for that person that you know. If you don't have anybody, then it's you and your faith. If you have faith, if you don't have faith, then it's you. Then figure out how to back yourself up. Because I've been in that position before too, where the only person to have my back was me. And you've got to back yourself up and don't give up. You can't allow yourself to give up. Just keep moving forward.
Don't give up. Reach out for someone, for help to somebody. Very good. Excellent. Power. Okay, so we've got fear, guilt, greed, love, exclusivity, desperation, power, and glory. Seen a lot of that these days.
I don't think I'm tracking you on this one, Dave. What do you mean by power and glory?
So, I mean, we're looking at motivators. What motivates people?
Yeah, without a doubt. You know, from I'm assuming we're taking this out of the marketing realm and taking it back to survival preparedness, since that's the show.
Yep.
But, you know, there's definitely people that are going to be power hungry in disaster situations. We had a tornado hit a small community here in Kentucky several years ago, and there was somebody that was hoarding all the water. There were people that were stealing the water that the National Guard was bringing in, and their community members were without water. And, you know, it's amazing how quickly people will revert to, you know, evil tendencies if they're just under the surface. And just think about, hey, nobody has any water, but this dude over here has got enough water for, you know, the whole community in his warehouse, but he won't give it up. That's crazy. Mm-hmm. Crazy.
And then last but not least, my favorite one. This is fantastic. It's higher purpose. And we can look at this as duty, honor, responsibility, or selfless love. And that's a genuine motivator. I mean, that motivates me in most of what I do, just because of my core values and the legacy that I want to leave behind in my kids and my grandkids and the people around me that I love and my friends.
Yeah. I think a higher purpose takes on several different things, but you think about the founders of our country and the honor and responsibility that they felt, some of the things that they gave up. Most of the signers of the Declaration of Independence lost basically fortunes just to make all that happen, or they were killed. And it was because of their sacrifice that we have what we have here in this country. and we're pissing it away, arguing about politics. It's ridiculous. It pisses me off. But we got to have a responsibility to higher responsibility that goes over and above our own personal needs and wants. And then there's obviously those people that have an attachment to some faith-based belief system. And I think it's been pretty clear where I stand on that, where you stand on that. But I don't want to discredit anybody that doesn't have that either. I mean, we all need to be looking to something bigger than ourselves, because life is bigger than ourselves. There's a lot more to it than just our small piece of it.
So my challenge here is, what is your higher purpose? What is bigger than the you that you're living for? And if you can't define that, just take some time, think about it, pray about it, meditate on it, and see what you come up with. All right, Craig, let's get into these SMART goals. And I'm going to scan down through here, but maybe let's just talk about for a minute why our goals are important. And, you know, I suppose just by nature that well-conceived and accomplished goals are forward-thinking and hopeful in general and aid in helping us to progressively fulfill our purpose. So, Craig, why don't you go ahead and take us into SMART goals, what they are, and I know you're big on acronyms, so start stepping us through there, and we can just have a short discussion about each one of the steps.
Yeah, you put together a real good, I don't know if you came up with this or if somebody else did, but it's the first time I had seen it this way, and I like it. There's several different ways to look at this, but SMART being an acronym, S being specific, M measurable, A actionable or attainable, which we were talking about earlier, R being relevant, and T being time bound, man.
That's awesome.
People's got to do that. That's very important. But that's what SMART goals are, is coming up with, look at everything that you're going to do and then lay down that acronym and go, okay, it's got to be very specific, meaning I want to get, you don't want to say something like, I want to get some water for prepping. I want to have X amount of gallons of water per person in my house for X amount of days. Get specific about it. That's also makes it measurable so that you know that, hey, I've met my goal when I get to that point. And it tells you exactly what you can do. That's the action of it, how much I've got to go get. And obviously, by knowing what your body needs, you know it's relevant. And hey, I want to get this done in the next 2 weeks. So you get it done. That's how you do a SMART goal, just using water as an example. Specific, measurable, actionable and or attainable, relevant and time bound.
So one of the big things with specific is, let's just say my goal is I want to fly a plane. What do you think about that?
About you flying a plane?
All right. Maybe let's do this. Pick a goal that is a specific goal. I want to get my pilot's license. I want to be a black belt in karate. I want to lose 5 pounds within 2 months so I can fit in my summer clothes better. Or I want to increase my disaster preparedness so my family can comfortably survive for 2 weeks without electricity. Which one of those is a more specific goal?
Gotcha. I'm with you. I follow what you're saying now.
Yeah.
Getting the pilot license is not very specific, is it?
How many years did it take you to get your first black belt?
Who, me?
Yeah.
I'm Craig Cottleson. It took me about 6 months.
And you're,
no, I'm joking.
And you're a Carhartt model. We learned that last week. I didn't know that, dude. That's sweet. Can you send me an autograph from back in the day?
No.
No.
No. It did take me a while to get a black belt. But yeah, and that was always something that would work well, that we was a goal setting thing that I did for years with people, you know, was put that, you know, put goals in front of them. Hey, I would go up to people and say, yep, I want you to test in about 3 months. And it was really interesting to see how people would just step it up. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they needed somebody like me to go, yep, you need test in the next 3 months. If I hadn't done that, if I hadn't mentored them in that way, then they would have wandered and probably not got things done on their own. There was a guy that I trained with when I first started that it took him about 13, 14 years to get his black belt. And it wasn't because he wasn't a good judo man. He was a good judo guy. He just, our teacher just did not care if we tested. And so he just kind of didn't test for years. I mean, his brown belt literally was falling apart, falling off of him. And one day our teacher finally said, you need to test. And he went crazy and tested and did really well. So sometimes it takes something like that, very specific. Hey, you need to get your black belt in 2 months now. You've been doing this for too long, you know, whatever, something.
And if a goal gets too complicated, just break it down into a smaller goal. So what ends up happening is you can have a larger goal that maybe we call that an objective. So under your objective, you might have three or four different specific goals that are progressive that work off of each other.
Yeah, I dig that.
Yep. And then measurable, something that a few years ago, before I started using this in business and seeing how necessary it is, sometimes we can set arbitrary goals that have no accountability to them. In the sense that, like, well, here's one. I will do my first overnight camp out in the wilderness on June 11th and June 12th.
There you go. Yeah.
Or maybe I'll pack on Friday and leave Friday morning. There, break it down a little bit more, okay? So to make it measurable, maybe we break it down a little bit more and say, I'm going to pack up on Friday and leave Friday afternoon, hike 3 miles to camp, set up, and stay overnight. I will return and arrive home by Saturday night, June 12th. So there you go. That's even a little bit more broken down and measurable.
Mm-hmm.
And then attainable, this gets back to what we were saying before. Do you have the skills, resources, authority even to attain a goal? So let's just say this is my first overnight. And an example might be Joe's big into camping. So I'm going to ask Joe to help me prepare, pack, and come with me on this trip. So I'm going to learn from Joe, and I'm going to ask him to teach me so that I can do it myself next time, and potentially after a couple camping trips, teach some others to do it. And that's kind of like engaging, like, that's just but being totally transparent with yourself and saying, hey, you know, I've not gone camping outside of my backyard before. Maybe I should take somebody along who can mentor me in this.
Yeah. Yeah. I can dig that.
Okay. Realistic and relevant. So do you have the time needed, the money, the skills, and are there any other constraints that can prevent you from doing this goal? Like, a good example would be, I need to, let's say maybe a goal that's too big would be, I heard that I'm supposed to have 6 months of a food supply. That's what I want. Now, there's a lot of things. What do we need to consider there, Craig? What are kind of like the realistic and relevant things that may be obstacles?
Well, I think the big thing is money. But looking at our money going, hey, do I take 10% out of my budget for preparedness supplies? And we can always go back to Stopa. And I think that's really good. What I mean by that is, if Stopa is stop, think, observe, plan, and actively stay alive. Think what you already have. What do you already have with you that are your supplies that you can utilize? If you realize you need something, then that's when you observe your surroundings and see what you can take from it to utilize it to affect the need that you have there. And so if we look at something and go, man, I just don't have the budget to get that, then you've got to look at something else that looks similar to it. You've got to look at something else that's cheaper and see if it will, you know, get the job done and then get it and move on. That way you've got more money, for example, because realistically, we all can't carry a $400 pack because it's the bomb-proof pack and it's, you know, it's solid as rock and kind of it does whatever I need it to do. Sometimes you just get the $25 one because, you know, it's going to work.
Yeah. So going back to our example, I talked to Joe and Joe says, okay, yeah, I'm willing to do that. Here's what you're going to need. You're going to need a backpack. You're going to need some hiking boots. You're going to need a tent and you're going to need a mess kit. And I look at my budget and I say, I've got $15 to my name. Now we've got to do some critical thinking, right?
Absolutely.
And so options might be, hey, I'm going to ask Joe if he's got anything I can borrow, or I'm going to go to the thrift shop, or, hey, yeah, my uncle used to be into camping. Maybe he's got something that he might be willing to sell to me for $15 or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Sure. Cool. Okay. Time bound. You seem to be all into this one. Once you take us a little bit, and I think this is where a lot of goals really fall apart, because a goal can dissipate into a mist if it's not specific, measurable, attainable, and realistic. And then we say, well, I want to do this unrealistic. I want to get in. It's January 1st, and I know that I'm 20 pounds overweight, and I want to get in shape in a month. That doesn't sound very realistic to me.
No.
In most cases, especially for some of us that got out of shape and have been working on it for like 3 or 4 years. Right, Craig? And I'm speaking specifically about me, not you.
No, you're right. I think this is where things start to fall apart. I think the big thing is to, again, be realistic, which you've already mentioned. But at the same time, you got to look at these time-bound goals, much like you do questions, open-ended or closed-ended questions. If you have an open-ended goal based upon time, then it just will not get done. If instead you set a calendar date, this is going to be done by this time, then you keep looking at it and you get things done. I have to do this all of the time, writing articles and writing.
I was going to ask you,
writing books.
Like, take us into that world, because I know that's very, very, very time oriented and some people just couldn't handle the pace. So you want to just step us into that world a little bit?
The pace writing a book for a publisher is, and we've talked about this before, I think on this podcast, but it's not work. Okay. It's not hard manual labor, but keeping the pace for writing a book is hard. It's this last book that I wrote, when they gave me the schedule, I'm looking at going, yeah, it's not going to be too bad, but it was basically two sections of the book each week for 2.5 months. And if something comes up and you don't get one of them done, and then you're behind. So you've absolutely got to get those two done that week, because you do not want to get behind. Because I've been there where I've gotten behind, and you can't let anybody get in the way. I mean, my editor got in the way this time, because she was like, oh, Craig, you're so far ahead. Don't worry about it. We hardly ever have writers that are ahead schedule like that. And I took a break. I took a week off. And guess what she did the week after that? Craig, you're behind. You got a bummer, you know. And I'm like, I'm going to swim across the ocean and choke you. I mean, you're driving me crazy. But those goals get those things done, or they just don't get done. And it's interesting for me to have, because I help people set goals at times. It's interesting to have an editor breathing down your neck, getting things done. Jim Cobb's one of the greatest mentors I've ever had. He's been fantastic for me for writing. Yeah. But the way he does with all his writers, and not just me, but basically I have to give him a pitch. I'm right now supposed to be doing some pitches for him the next day or so. Give him some ideas of articles I want to write. He'll follow up in a week. He always follows up within a week. At the end of that week, I'll know, hey, Craig, I want you to write these two articles. Here's the pay. Here's the topic. Here's the sidebar. Here's how many photos I want. And this is when I need it. And so as soon as I get that, I put that on my calendar. As soon as I get it, I put it on my calendar. That way I know I'm working towards that goal. And I have different aspects of it that I do. And I have a weird process I go through for writing a magazine article. But once I do that, then it gets done. If not, it doesn't get done. Like one time I forgot to put one on my calendar, and he's called me, you know, or emailed me a day after the due date. Craig, you're never late. Where's your article?
Oops.
And I hadn't written it at all. So I had to write it, and I had to write it that night. So it wasn't my best work. It was good work. I put everything I had to into it, but it wasn't my best work because I didn't set my goals right. I didn't have it time bound. I didn't have it on my schedule, make sure I was getting it done.
Very good. So a goal without a deadline is a dream.
Yeah, I like that. That's pretty good.
Yeah. Deadlines and time goals mark our progress and help us to assess where we're at in the process of achieving our goal. And you mentioned this too along the way, that if you don't have a time goal, then you don't even know where you're at in the process. So theoretically, you could, you know, you could be on a project that should take you maybe, let's just say it takes you a month. You have a goal that, you know, the goal date's a month out. And if you're not marking your progress in some way, you have no idea where you're at. And so things get compressed. So you find out that, hey, when you've got 2 days left, you've got 2 weeks worth of work to do, and it's just impossible to get it done.
Right.
So goals are really, really important. All right, Craig. So we've got SMART goals. SMART, make sure your goals are specific, measurable, attainable or actionable, are realistic, T, and timely or time bound. Couple success tips. And then let's just go ahead and do some action steps and get out of here.
Yeah, here's some big things, guys and gals. Very important. Use that SMART goal system. That I had not heard it that way. I have a different system for goal setting for me, but it's incredibly similar to that. And I feel very confident that will work. Very confident that it'll work, obviously, with the things that David's been able to accomplish with his work. I think part of that would be right now, as far as utilizing it and starting getting used to using it and put it into a system, is go ahead and write down a couple of goals. You know, go ahead and write goals down and then match them up against the SMART system, whether they are actually specific, are they measurable, are they attainable, are they, you know, are they realistic and are they timely? And if they're not, then readjust the goals, and that way you then have them. And a big thing you can do, there's a worksheet. Go over to ultimatesurvivaltips.com/SMART goals and get the free SMART goals worksheet, which I haven't looked at. That's pretty cool. I'm going there right now, son. What are you talking about?
Yeah, I use that. There's a camp that I'm on the board of, and we did some goal setting and some planning last year, and I put that together for that. So that'll be super helpful for anybody that wants to get this process going.
Yeah, that's cool as heck, man. That's good stuff.
And I also want to let people know in that stream, if they go over to thesurvivalshow.com, that's thesurvivalshow.com. What I did, Craig, is I started a blog over there, which is essentially the notes from each one of these podcasts moving forward. So I have last week's and this week's up there. It's our full notes that we've been working out of for this podcast. And right in there, people can grab a link, and that'll take them right to that SMART goals worksheet. So there's two ways to get there. There's the ultimatesurvivaltips.com/SMART goals, or just go to thesurvivalshowpodcast.com and then look for this week's notes.
Nice. That's real good. I dig it. I didn't know that was going on. That's really good. And last, as far as some action steps, let us know. Shoot us an email. Let us know how it's going, what kind of things that we can do to help you and get you going back on your goals so that you can get prepared. You know, obviously, one of the big things that we can do is to help you is a lot of you that are listening already have the Tiny Guide. Check it out, the Tiny Guide. It's fantastic. Survival Show 25 for 25% off Tiny Guides on ultimatesurvivaltips.com. Check it out. Pick one of those up. You can go right down through each one of those sections in the Tiny Guide and start developing goals right there. It would be really easy to do. Another one is to jump in through the Tiny Survival Masterclass. Again, use code TINY25 this time for 25% off the Masterclass. Check that out. Gotta love 25% off, you all. Come on. TINY25 for 25% off the Masterclass. And again, check out the links for the show notes. You'll be able to just click right on those links and go take you right to it. And jump into our classes at Nature Reliant School, our live training in-person classes. I'm going to be all over the country. We have some for Nature Reliant School. I'm also teaching for Fieldcraft Survival this year. I'm going to be all over the country. They're flying me everywhere, teaching different coursework. So jump into those. But for the courses at Nature Reliant School, use the code TSS podcast. That's the Survival Show podcast, TSS podcast, for 20% off any of our workshops and 3-day classes. Love to have you join us. Beyond that, what we're going to be doing, as David mentioned, is putting up the show notes over at thesurvivalshow.com. So check that out. And I just pulled it up. It's really easy to get to. Just go to thesurvivalshow.com, look at the podcast, and you can see where it says show notes. And then you can find the show notes. They're laying there right there for you. This is pretty cool, David. I didn't know you were doing that. That's fantastic. And as always, you all, I mean, you know, I'm going to say it. Y'all like it when I say it, too. Don't lie. You like it when I say it. Hashtag HBO. Help a brother out. Give us 5 stars. Punch it. Smash it. Touch it. Click it. Whatever you need to do to give us 5 stars and give us a review. Give us that feedback. Let us know how we're doing so that we can do what we can to improve upon the podcast and do what it is that you want us to do. Always, always appreciate everybody that's already done that. We can't thank you enough. Until next time, you all, keep it simple, stay positive, and be sharp.